All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, December 8th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 36 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. Feels a little crispy, but still no snow on the ground. I think we're at a record. I just saw something the other day that Buffalo has broken a no snow record that goes back to like 1896 or something. So it's pretty crazy for it to be the beginning of December and there is no snow on the ground is pretty rare. It's also going to be in the 60s this weekend. So it's almost like it's early spring here. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Artificial Womb, Chinese Clones, and Google Blood Draw Watch. And if you remember, we ended the show looking at this crazy patent that was just filed by Google for a Google watch that takes your blood without needles. And the reason why that's so frightening to me is we've talked about a lot of the different acquisitions and businesses that Google has been getting into. They are no longer just a search engine vendor. Google, if we remember back, was it last year or the year before, they bought like 8 military robotics companies. We also had them divest themselves. Google created a new umbrella company this year called Alphabet, which then put all of these little ancillary side projects they had going on under one big umbrella. And a lot of those were kind of creepy, getting into healthcare. Calico Project, which is the longevity, live forever project to be able to cure death as if it were a disease. Kurzweil talked about that. We have that National Institute of Health guy, Tom Insel, the former director, now moving over to Google to deal with Google mental health. And we also had their life sciences division where we had read a few stories that talked about being able to put nanotechnology into your bloodstream that would act like a doctor to be able to correct problems before they happened. And I think it was Kurzweil that we were listening to as well that had talked about that. One of the things that they had suggested is that at some point you'll have a device on your wrist that'll be able to take your statistics and determine whether or not there are any issues going on inside of you. Well, this Google Watch, I'm assuming right now, I saw that there was a contact lens that came out not too long ago that they were touting as it was taking readings from the liquid in your eye. It would be able to tell you what your bodily sugar levels were, and they were going to be selling it for diabetic patients. So I'm assuming that this is going to be something similar, but think of all, I mean, this is more than like eye liquid. This is now being able to take samples of your blood. And when we remember that Google's co-founder, Sergey Brin, is married to the woman who is the CEO of 23andMe. Her name was Ann something. And 23andMe is now working on 21st century medicine, this precision healthcare, by taking samples that have been marked as being able to be used for research out of DNA samples that were given to them to be able to look up your ancestry or whatever. They're now going to use those samples in research to be able to develop drugs and cures based upon DNA. So when you put all these little pieces together, this definitely, the Google watch that can take blood samples, sounds a little more ominous. Now, we discussed yesterday, too, my health insurance plan is offering for the first time ever for $5. I can get a visit with a doctor online. And, you know, back when I was doing engineering, telemedicine was something that was still really kind of in the future drawing board, but we were already preparing companies, building out the back end to be able to support streaming video, which is one of the things that you would want with a telemedicine initiative, to be able to see your doctor. Your doctor could be sitting in one central location, and it doesn't matter where. It could be in Bangalore, for all you know, and be able to see the patient and get statistics. So being able to get statistics, you know, they can take oxygen readings, the little thing on your finger. I'm sure if they haven't done it already, they'll be able to give it a USB interface and collect stats off of that. They might be able to have you breathe into something and be able to take some sort of, I don't know, I'm sure in your breath, there's readings, there's molecules of, you know, things you've eaten or things you've, your waste product out of your breathing. I don't know what they would call it. But I mean, there's lots of studies now where like animals can detect cancer just by smelling you. So I'm sure that they're going to have a lot more of that in the future. But being able to take direct samples of your blood, analyze them, and I didn't pull the story up, but I did have another story about a quick analyzing solution that DARPA has been working on. And what a dummy, I'm not even on my own page. Good morning. Need a little bit more coffee. But yeah, DARPA has this little device that can do rapid diagnostics, and it was within a half an hour, I believe. And they were saying, of course, that it was going to be used in the field in the case of the coming pandemics, and don't think that there won't be. You know, all this healthcare stuff is out there and it's still kind of in the fringes, but I'm going to predict there's going to be some big bio calamity that is going to pull the trigger for all of this to become commonplace. And of course, it'll be wonderful. Oh, here it is. Of course, it'll be wonderful because the new technology will save us from the dangers and it'll be accepted just like the militarization of everything that's been happening. Yeah, here it is, a cheap disposable device for diagnosing diseases. The development of a reusable microfluidic device for sorting and manipulating cells and other micro/nanometer scale objects will make biomedical diagnosis of diseases cheaper and more convenient in regions where medical facilities are sparse or cost is prohibitive. Researchers at Penn State University. And you know, we read something not too long ago. It was the woman of the Ethics Committee, I believe, for the Federal Ethics Committee, which I read that Obama had dissolved. But she was from Penn State. And ever since I read that story, I've been noticing Penn State shows up in a lot of this mad science gone mad. But back to the story. Researchers at Penn State University have recently filed a patent to develop such a device. Based on gentle acoustic vibrations, the device called acoustic tweezers is the work of Penn State professor of engineering, science, and mechanics, Tony Huang, and his students. And their work is the cover article of the current issue of the journal Lab on a Chip. We believe that acoustic tweezers have tremendous potential, especially in diagnostics, with some applications also in therapeutics, says Wang. Our current device works well, but to be used in diagnostics, the whole device has to be disposed of after one use. We have now found a way to separate the fluid-containing part of the device from the much more expensive ultrasound-producing piezoelectric substrate, and this makes the disposable acoustic tweezers possible. So at least they're going to keep the expensive part, get rid of the part that is the blood or the bodily fluids, it sounds like. Huang believes that the disposable plastic portion of the device, maybe it should be something other than plastic, since plastic really isn't disposable unless it's biodegradable, can be manufactured for as little as 25 cents per unit. And even with the addition of electronics for diagnosis, which could easily be added off the shelf, he foresees a manufacturing cost of a few hundred dollars for the complete permanent system, which then could be used over and over with a simple replacement of the plastic microfluidic channels. We want to push this toward a commercial product, something that can be help to people and a benefit to society. In the prior device, the microfluidic channel was permanently bound to the substrate and the ultrasound would be radiated directly into the fluid. In the new device, there is an intervening layer, but the ultrasound force is strong enough to manipulate the cells and to pattern them. This patterning of cells is especially important in studying cell-to-cell communication in biology labs or for drug screening. So, Johnny, did you take your pills today? Well, let's do a little mobile drug screen with your Google Watch. Woo! This is not a Google product, by the way. But, I mean, what would it take once they get people to start wearing these diagnostic devices? What would it take to integrate something like this into there? I don't think it would take very much. In drug screening, you want to examine how cells respond to drugs, and with acoustic tweezers, we can create a high-throughput single cell and see how they respond to drugs. Or we can create all types of cell assemblies and see how they respond to drugs, much more like how it would work inside the body. Reusable acoustic tweezers for disposable devices is the name of the paper that Feng Guo, a PhD student in Huang's group, just authored. In addition to its use in diagnosing diseases such as HIV and tuberculosis, both of which are endemic in resource-poor regions of the world, yeah, soon to be all regions of the world resource-poor, the device should find widespread use in hospitals, clinics, biology labs, and the home, ding, 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 due to its low cost and ease of use. So at home, blood and fluid taking is not too far in the distant future, it doesn't sound like. So let's get back now to this Google Watch. So Google's filed a patent for a watch that takes your blood without needles. And we had read a story a while ago about the nano patches. You know, little Johnny isn't going to have to worry about those scary needles anymore. And we got 271 newfangled vaccines waiting in the wings to get into you, little Johnny. Don't worry about it. We'll slap a nano patch on your arm and you won't feel a thing. Well, I don't exactly know how Google's doing this, but that's what it made me think of was that needleless injection patch. It says needle-free blood tests. Google has filed a patent for a smartwatch that can take small samples of your blood without the use of needles, and it could, of course, help diabetics more easily monitor their blood glucose levels throughout the day. I told you, that little pinprick in the end of your finger, maybe the first time it hurts, but after the 100th time, you don't even feel it. Currently, diabetics need to perform a finger prick and use a blood glucose meter multiple times a day to make sure their insulin levels are under control. But based on the limited information we have so far, Google's new smartwatch-like device looks poised to replace that system with something less painful and more automatic. Yes, Ding is just going to take your blood at set intervals without your intervention. Oh my God. Given that the invention is still in its patent phase, Google is remaining tight-lipped about exactly how this device is going to work or what it might be used for or even when or if it gets made. So, whew, put on a worrying seatbelt. It might not happen, but I'm going to guess that it will. If I rolled the dice and had an investment to make, I probably would say that this is coming. But it has provided a little bit of insight into the process. The patent application reveals that the device first sends an, quote, abrupt surge, unquote, of gas into the barrel containing a microparticle. And I just wondered what that microparticle is. Is it a chip of some kind? Or is it just some sort of particle that'll puncture the skin? And when it punctures the skin, so maybe it is, to produce a small droplet of blood, this blood is then sucked into a negative pressure barrel where it can be used for further testing. And such an application might be used to draw a small amount of blood, for example, for a glucose test, writes Google in its application. From the diagrams released with the patent, it looks like the device is a little tube that's stored in the chunky watch-like device that you can see above, which there's a picture in this article. Can you say hello, 80s design? And then it is removed and used when the patient's blood needs to be taken. Although diabetic, so it looks like for now the patent is you got something on your fingertip that has like a suction cup, I guess, and it's inside this little watch. Although diabetics aren't specifically mentioned in the patent, it doesn't take a tech expert to read between the lines and get an idea of the intended target market. It also isn't the first time that Google has actively targeted diabetics with its inventions. Oh, so it was Google with the smart contact lens. Just last year, a research team at Google's life sciences division announced that it was developing a smart contact lens that'll be able to monitor blood glucose levels. And another group is also working on a disposable bandage-sized glucose monitor. And yeah, I'm going to give you a heads up. Never put anything that has anything to do with Google into your eyeball. Okay, your eye has a direct connect optic nerve to the brain. I would never get Google that close to my brain, especially knowing what I know. It's a pretty sensible business move for the company, with 1 in 3 U.S. adults projected to have diabetes by 2050 if the current trending continues. Yes, it's all that glyphosate in our food. And, you know, let's just stop for 1 second talking about this current trending. 1 in 3 adults with diabetes by 2050. You know, the United States is one of the only countries that has just free out carte blanche, anything and everything, get rid of labeling, and GMO has been in our food for 20 years, we discovered. But I just saw that there's a GMO company in China. They make GMO products, and I don't know, I didn't really read too much in depth about them. But the interesting thing was is that China has a moratorium on GMOs in their food supply. Now, even though they're doing like cloning and crap in their labs, their people, according to the story, are not eating it yet. And so this Chinese company is actually going to come to the United States and set up shop here to be able to peddle their GMO wares where it is more GMO friendly. I mean, can you even believe that? Origin Agritech is their name. Is the latest, I don't know what this is. All right, let's go. Is the latest Chinese agricultural biotechnology company to seek its fortune overseas as a means to get around local bans on genetically modified produce as it launches itself in America. Though Beijing has incurred significant investment in GMO research, it is yet to approve any major food crops for cultivation in the country. Now, that's got to tell you something. China's not using GMO. I also just saw Putin came out. He is going to become, and he wants to become, the world's largest producer of non-GMO food. I mean, talk about a shifty, not shifty in a bad way, a shifty in a good way move to be able to position yourself to make bazillions of dollars as the world is pushing back against this takeover of our food system, and our government is just allowing it to happen. Anyway, so this Chinese company, Origin Agritech, is coming to the USA. They intend to begin operations next year in 2016 in America, whose market is well accustomed to GMO production, according to details logged with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Its chief financial officer, James Chen, told Reuters that it is currently deciding on which strategy to take. Since it began in 2005, Origin has invested more than 300 million renminbi, which is 46.9 million U.S. dollars in biotech, and is listed in America to get on the stock exchange. Its most advanced product is a corn, like we need more, with two traits that resist pests. And if it enters the American market, it will find it dominated by agrobiotech giant Monsanto. We think the technology is fundamental value. Farmers are looking for alternatives to current products. The company is most likely route to market would be finding partners interested in licensing its traits to stack alongside others. So it's going to sell its genetic modifications to other companies to put into their genetically modified products, it sounds like. Though it would need regulatory approval to do so, which could take years, alternately, Origin could set up a standalone business unit within the United States as well. This is not the first company to look away from China in a bid to circumvent domestic GMO regulations. China National Chemical Corp, also earlier this year, attempted to acquire a Swiss-based Syngenta for its biotech pipeline, though this ultimately failed due to regulatory concerns. And I had heard that Syngenta was in negotiations with someone, and now they're talking about cutting a deal with Monsanto and changing their name. We looked at that as well, and setting up their headquarters instead of in the United States, putting it in Europe. So, all right, we're going to hop off of that. I just thought I would share that with you. Chinese agrobiotech to compete with Monsanto in the United States. That's even worse than Chinese chicken. But hey, what's even worse than all of that is Google being in the life sciences and making a device potentially here in the future that's going to be able to take your blood and do remote diagnostics. So anyway, it's a pretty sensible business move for the company, with 1 in 3 U.S. adults projected to have diabetes by 2050 if the current trends continue, according to the CDC. And of course, just because Google is patenting an idea, of course, it doesn't mean that it's going to come anytime soon. The company told The Verge, which is a tech magazine, quote, "We hold patents on various ideas, and some of these ideas later mature into real products of services and some don't. Prospective product announcements should not necessarily be inferred from our patents," unquote. But we can't help but hope, and this isn't me, this is the writer of the story out of ScienceAlert.com. "We cannot help but hope that this device makes it to market, because a faster and more painless way to monitor blood would make a whole lot of people's lives easier." Oh, yes, now wouldn't it? It'd make a whole lot of governments' lives easier, too. They could surveil us down to every molecule in our blood painlessly by just making us wear this little device on our wrist or our ankle. So that takes me to our next story. This one came out of Scientific American on December 1st, about a week ago, called "The Inside Story on Wearable Electronics." You remember, we talked a lot about wearable electronics, the wearables, and the Android wearable operating system is coming as well. It's all part of the Internet of Things. We have all the tech companies involved with producing things for the Internet of Things, as well as appliance companies. And we had Google. We read about Nest. They bought this heating and cooling company that also has surveillance and crime monitoring capabilities within the home. Researchers want to wire the human body with sensors that could harvest reams of data to be able to what? Oh, transform healthcare. Yes, this is exactly what we've been saying. And of course, Obama says precision medicine is going to be our next big economic boom. Goran Gustafsson looks at people and thinks of cars, the aging models that rolled off the assembly lines a few decades ago. "Today," says Gustafsson, "cars are packed with cutting-edge sensors, computers, and sophisticated communication systems that warn of problems when they are still easy to fix, which is why modern vehicles rarely surprise their drivers with catastrophic breakdowns." And we read, too, yes, cars have now been deemed mobile computing devices, right? We read about them trying to use DMCA, Copyright Millennium Act, to prevent people from modifying their vehicles because they are so quote-unquote complicated. And that's the way they get us now, it seems, is this scientific technocratic upper class that makes everything so complicated that only the few elite who have the special education are the only ones who can actually understand everything. And so it's easy for them to pull a slick willy and to do whatever they want, to take control quietly, silently, and through technology. Well, wearable devices, in the name of how we're going to provide your future medicine, is going to be able to get them into every nook and cranny of your existence. Anyway, so this Gustafsson says, you know, a car is so loaded with electronics now that we don't surprise drivers with catastrophic breakdowns. He says, why don't we have a similar vision for our bodies? Gustafsson is an engineer whose team at the Swedish electronics company Acrio, based in Kista, is one of the many around the world trying to make this vision possible. Instead of letting health problems go undetected until a person ends up in a hospital, the medical equivalent of a roadside breakdown, these teams foresee a future in which humans are wired up like cars with sensors that form a similar early warning system. Working with researchers at Linkoping, and that really is the name, Linkoping, Linkoping University in Sweden, Gustafsson's team has developed skin surface and implanted sensors, as well as an in-body intranet, oh my God, that can link devices while keeping them private. Other groups are developing technologies ranging from skin patches that sense arterial stiffening, a looming sign of heart disease and heart attack, to devices that detect epileptic fits and automatically deliver drugs to the affected areas of the brain. Now, that was some of the stuff that DARPA was working on, too, with some of those brain implants. These next-generation devices are designed to function alongside tissue rather than be isolated from it like most pacemakers and other electronic devices already used in the body. But making this integration work is no easy feat, especially for material scientists who must constantly shrink circuits radically, making flexible and stretchable electronics that are imperceptible to tissue, meaning that your body won't form a big, ugly cyst around it, finding it as a foreign invader. So they're going to try and slip this stuff in without our body recognizing it, in which devices monitor and treat the body day in and day out. These will require new power sources and new ways of transmitting information. Since the potential to improve healthcare substantially while reducing its costs has drawn both researchers and physicians to the challenge, says John Rogers, a material scientist at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, I haven't found any clinical folks who say that is pie in the sky. Come back to me in 20 years. They say, wow, that's cool. Here's three ways we can use it today. And how do we get started on a collaboration? Guys, we've been sold. This is being sold every which way. And it is just a matter of time now. Sensors woven into the body are woven into the body, like body snatchers, are a natural extension of handheld smartphones and wearable devices, says Rogers. Yes, it's time for your implantation, Johnny. Oh my God, it's really happening, guys. This is really happening. I think electronics is coming at you, he says. It's migrating closer and closer, and I think it is a very natural thing to imagine that eventually they will become intimately integrated within the body. The first step beyond wearables will be wireless sensors mounted directly on the skin, where they can pick up a host of vital signs, including temperature, pulse, and breathing rate. Unfortunately, says Rogers, biology involves bending, stretching, and swelling, which makes conventional electronics built from stiff silicone wafers a very poor choice for such sensors. But his team developed an epidermal electronic, which is flexible, biodegradable, and stick-on, that's crammed with sensors but almost imperceptible to the user. So just like a nicotine patch, I would assume. Attached like temporary tattoos. The patches use normal silicon electronics but thinned down and transferred to a flexible backing using a rubber stamp. The patch draws power either from nearby magnetic fields or by harvesting radio waves. And we read about those as well. Those were new ways of being able to pull power out of the air for small devices. So I guess they already found a use for it. The patches draw power either from nearby magnetic fields or by harvesting radio waves using S-shaped wires and antennas designed to stretch, twist, and bend. They adopt a wavy kind of geometry, so when you stretch, the wave shapes can change like accordion bellows, says Rogers. Rogers has co-founded a spin-off company called MC10, based in Lexington, Massachusetts, that next year will start marketing versions of the device called BioStamps. Temporary patches that measure heart electrical activity, hydration, body temperature, and exposure to ultraviolet light. They'll be able to sell that one pretty easily to dumb end users. The patch will be available to consumers first, says Rogers, but his real target is medicine. Results are expected soon from a trial at a neonatal intensive care unit at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, where doctors are using the patches to monitor the vital signs of newborn babies without the need for intrusive cables and scanners. MC10 is also collaborating with a Brussels-based pharmaceutical company called UCB on tests of a patch that monitors tremors in people's with what? Oh, Parkinson's. Yeah, Parkinson's with dopamine. I mean, that's one of the big ones that DARPA's been working on as well. To track their illness and whether or not they are taking their medications. Ding, 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 ding. That is how it's going to be used, Johnny. Did you take your medication that keeps you unaware of the things that we're trying to pull over your eyes? Rogers patches are relatively small, but at the University of Tokyo, engineer Takako Somnya has created a sensor-laden electronic skin that can be made in much larger pieces. His latest film is just 1 micrometer thick and so light that it floats like a feather, yet it is robust enough to cope with the stretching and crumpling needed to flex with an elbow or a knee. It can provide readouts on temperature, heat in a wound can signal infection, also moisture, pulse, and oxygen concentration in the blood. Ding, ding. I knew that was there. Somnier achieves this by ditching silicone altogether and instead using an inherently soft organic component made of carbon-based polymers and other materials. Organic circuits can be printed onto a plastic film, making them cheap and easy to produce in large quantities, and they are versatile, working in both high temperatures and water-based environments. Skin also inspires Zhenhan Biao, an engineer at Stanford University in California. Her team creates thin pressure sensors by sandwiching micrometer scale rubber pyramids between films. Even a slight touch will compress the pyramid's tips, changing how the electric current flows between the films. The sensors can then be used in heart monitors that track how fast pressure waves pass through the arteries, and this can reveal increased stiffness in the vessels, a predictor for heart attacks. Last year, the Food and Drug Administration approved a wireless pressure sensor that can be implanted inside the hearts of people with advanced heart disease, and Bao's device could do a similar job from the surface of the skin. As useful as skin-mounted patches might be, much more information is available deeper in the body. There is a reason why at the hospital they draw your blood, says Mike Ostrano, a chemical engineer at MIT in Cambridge. There are markers in the blood that are exquisitely good at predicting disease. But delving deeper brings fresh challenges, and ideally, says Strano, sensors under the skin should be not only non-toxic, but also stable enough to function inside the body for years at a time if need be, and biocompatible, meaning that they do not trigger the body's immune response. Yet most current devices fall short of this on one score or another. For example, sensors that detect chemical signals in the blood called biomarkers often use biological materials that degrade very quickly. This is a severe limitation for advanced real-time sensors that are currently being used to monitor glucose in people with diabetes, says Strano. Hence, I'm going to say Google's patent application. These devices detect glucose with an enzyme reaction that produces hydrogen peroxide, and this degrades the sensor so quickly that they must be replaced within weeks. To get around that, Strano's lab, he must be working on something too, has developed a synthetic long-lived detector material that can be mixed with water-based gel and injected under the skin like a tattoo. Ooh. The quote-unquote ink for this tattoo. How disturbing is this? Mark of the beast in a tattoo. Number on your arm with synthetic long-lived detector materials. This is horrifying. The ink for this tattoo consists of what? Oh, carbon nanotubes. It gets even better. Coated with dangling polymer strands, which have a lock and key chemical structure that recognizes biomarkers by dictating which molecules can dock with them. When biomarkers bind to the polymer, they subtly change the optical properties of the nanotube, i.e. shine a light on the tattoo and the glow reveals the presence of a biomarker. So you're on probation and you're not allowed to drink alcohol. Think about this. They can inject this little silicone biosensor detector under the skin. And anytime that you try and sneak a nip, they can come up at any time. Probation officer could show up at your door and tell you to show your arm, and they shine a light where your little electronic tattoo is, and it glows. Oh, Johnny, you've been bad. This is very scary. Strano and his team have developed carbon nanotube sensors to monitor nitric acid in the blood as well, and that's what causes the, what's it called, where your joints crunch. Gout, I think it's called, an inflammatory marker that can indicate infection or even cancer, and are also working on a glucose and cortisol detector, a stress biomarker that may prove useful for monitoring post-traumatic stress disorder and anxiety disorders. Yes, we got to check on your mental health, and hey, we found a biomarker for it. The nitric acid sensor worked for 400 days in mice, which to Strano's knowledge is the longest of any implanted chemical sensor that has been in place, and did so without provoking any type of immune response. For many other kinds of devices, the jury is still out. For electronic materials, especially plastic-based and organics, it is still unknown what their long-term effects are, says Bao. But hey, that never stopped the FDA from approving anything, Bao. You should just go for it. You know, they're not doing any type of long-term studies in GMOs or RNAi. No, they just let it all loose. Now Strano is starting work with MIT engineer Daniel Anderson on devices that could combine sensors with what? Oh, with drug delivery systems. How convenient. Now when we detect that you have mental PTSD coming on, we could just inject you with something automatically and take care of it all. They hope to adapt microchips pioneered by fellow MIT engineer Robert Langer, to respond to a range of triggers by releasing the appropriate drugs into your bloodstream, which will be encased in polymer capsules. The first human trials of a drug-delivered, quote-unquote, pharmacy on a chip without the sensors was in 2012 in 8 women with osteoporosis. Well, that's interesting. I hadn't heard about that human trial before. It'll be a long time, he says, before such devices can be used to detect diseases reliably and then treat them automatically, except for perhaps diabetes, which has been extensively studied. Strano's devices are good at binding only with their target molecules, but the big question remains about what fluctuations in biomarker signals actually means in terms of health. Well, all they got to do is get good old IBM's Watson on the case, and I'm sure he'll be able to provide them with enough medical intelligence on the back end to be able to model those scenarios. So his team is modeling biomarkers in the body to help to decide where the sensors need to be and how quickly it should react to give useful information. Often you need to rely on many different sensory parameters to make a decision. It is not enough that one chemical is overexpressed. Some researchers' targets still lie deeper in the body, and for them, flexibility and biocompatibility are even more important. If a rigid sensor rubs against a moving organ, such as the heart or the brain, in which the cells shift slight as the animal breathes, the body will quickly surround it with a wall of scar tissue. And if the sensors move relative to the organ, the result will be unreliable in any case. Bioelectronics engineer George Malarius at the École Nationale Supérieure des Mines de Saint-Étienne de Gardelin, France. I don't know. And his colleagues are among those developing flexible replacements for the relatively rigid sensors currently in use to track distinctive electrical patterns in the brains of people with epilepsy or Parkinson's disease. We already read, I mean, this is some of the DARPA stuff. They were stretchy electronics implantable in the brain that could then give, with the push of a button, a dose of medication. I mean, that's already in the works. And remember, they sprinkle funding money at all these universities. DARPA does not do it on their own. They use quote-unquote contractors. Made of organic conducting polymers, these flexible electronics respond to chemical signals, which are the flow of ions that generate the electrical patterns. This not only increases sensitivity, but lets researchers interface with biology in a wholly different fashion, he says. Interfacing with biology. The team's latest device, tested in rats as well as in two humans undergoing surgery for epilepsy, has detected the firing of individual neurons. And if the process is reversed, the sensor then can be used to deliver drugs. Ding, da-da-ding. Devices known as organic electronic ion pumps respond to an applied voltage by forcing drugs, small charged particles, out of a reservoir. And working with the group at Linkoping University and the French National Institute of Health and Medical Research Facilities in Marseille, Malarius's team is coupling his epilepsy sensor to an ion pump that responds to seizures by releasing epilepsy drugs into the correct part of the brain. Bergen and the Linkoping team have used similar techniques to develop a pacemaker for pain that delivers analgesics directly to the spinal cord. Oh my God. We could keep going. Keep it going. Electronic device is limited by its need for power. You know, we read that they're going to be harvesting radio waves and magnetic fields out of the air. I also had seen a few little devices now that are also going to be using the kinetic energy that is built up by muscles when we move to be able to power devices. They created a biodegradable battery as well, using electrodes made of magnesium and other metals that are safe in low concentrations in the body and that slowly dissolve. Some devices you want to last the life of the patient, but in others you only need and want the device to be temporary. And the technology that we've talked about could be revolutionary, but the vision of a wired-up body that sends data to an outside computer or medical center faces a threat that already troubles the wearable industry, and that is hacking. And hey, to those of us that are all savvy to that, what worries me even more is who's going to be looking at that data and what are they going to be doing with it? One solution is to analyze data on the device itself, reducing the amount that gets sent over the airwaves. Another is to avoid the airwaves altogether. In an as-yet unpublished work, the Swedish team has developed an in-body intranet that transmits signals at low frequencies using the body's water as its wires. to send information between devices. From a device to a smartphone, users must physically touch the objects with their hands. This keeps the signals low power and private and avoids clogging up the data transmitting frequencies that are already squabbled over by mobile phones and wireless routers. It is only transmitted and exposed within your body, adds Bergen, who says that the system can already exchange data between electronically labeled objects that are throughout the body to a smartphone and will soon integrate on skin sensors. However good the devices are, pioneers of new materials will also struggle against the tide of medical regulations. Yes, those pesky medical regulations, which the 21st Century Care Act will make sure they get rid of. That, along with the concerns of chemical suppliers who are afraid that failing devices could leave them vulnerable to lawsuits. Well, hey, Congress, let's just get rid of any and all lawsuits being able to be waged against any of these biopharma companies. And we could take care of that as well, like we did with vaccines. They said because of the medical regulations and because of the concern of lawsuits, yes, this puts a big break, as in B-R-A-K-E, a stop on the adoptions of new materials. Boo-hoo. The worry about regulations and hurting people is putting the brakes on medical innovation that could save millions of people and make us bazillions of dollars. Bregan knows that there are big hurdles. He says the challenge is to put everything together. But they did it for the car industry. And it's very impressive, and you rarely see cars standing along the side of the road waiting for a repair. So whether it's possible to do this for humans is still a question mark, but it's definitely worth trying, he says. A car usually is kept for less than 10 years, and a body you will want to keep for 80 or 90, so it is a lot more precious. I mean... Did that story not make you want to puke? Because I know that's how it made me feel. Well, don't worry, because scientists have developed a new liquid metal nanoterminator to target cancer cells. And its mission isn't to kill you. It's to protect you. Ah, yes. Liquid metal terminators are generally something to be afraid of. But what if the substance was used to fight cancer instead of wiping out humanity? Guys, this is the exact ploy I told you they were gonna use. They're telling you it's gonna cure cancer, except it all. And now it's a liquid metal nanoterminator. I mean, I read about this liquid metal nano probably a month or two ago, and I was like, how horrifying is that? Like, really, that was kind of what Terminator was made out of, and you couldn't destroy it, and you chopped it up, and it went bloop, and it made itself back into the Terminator again. He stuck a rod through its eyeball, and it came right out the other side and self-healed. Do we really want liquid metal, quote, what they're calling nanoterminators in our blood? Well, this is exactly what the researchers in the U.S. are working on, having developed a biodegradable liquid metal that can be used as a drug delivery technique to target cancer cells. Quote, the advance here is that we have a drug delivery technique that may enhance the effectiveness of the drugs being delivered. It can help doctors locate tumors. It can be produced in bulk. And it appears to be wholly biodegradable with very low toxicity, says Zhen Gu, a biomedical engineer in a joint program at North Carolina State University and University at Chapel Hill. And one of the advantages of this technique, he says, is that these liquid metal drug carriers or nanoterminators are very easy to make. To make the nanoterminators, the researchers deposit a liquid metal, which is a gallium indium alloy, into a solution with molecules called polymeric ligands. Polymeric ligands, L-I-G-A-N-D-S. Bombarding the solution with ultrasound waves. Ultrasound seems to be figuring more and more in a lot of this mad science gone mad, by the way. And remember, we discovered that that also opens the blood-brain barrier. Bombarding the solution with ultrasound waves causes the liquid metal to burst into nanoscale droplets measuring about 100 nanometers in diameter. The ligands then attach to the surface of the droplet and form a skin that prevents the alloy from fusing back together T-1000 style, so like the Terminator. And when the anti-cancer drug doxorubicin is introduced into the solution, the ligands on the nanodroplet absorb it, creating a drug-laden vessel that can be separated from the solution and introduced into the bloodstream. I'm not stepping up for that one. But that's not all. An additional type of ligand that attaches to the nanodroplet can also effectively seek out and target cancer cells by making receptors on the surface of the cell latch onto and ultimately absorb the nanodroplets, which ends up releasing the doxorubicin inside the cancer cell. Hasta la vista. When inside the cancer cell, the liquid metal reacts with the cell's acidity and releases gallium ions, which actually boost the performance of the doxorubicin while simultaneously degrading the metal. And based on in vitro tests, we believe that the liquid metal degrades completely in a matter of days into a form that the body can successfully absorb or filter out without notable toxic effects, says one of the team, Yu Liu. The researchers' findings, published in Nature Communications, detail how the nanoterminators were more effective than doxorubicin alone in inhibiting the growth of ovarian cancer cells in testing on a mouse model, and the team intends to continue the research first with larger animal studies before hopefully moving on to clinical trials with people. This was a proof of concept study, but very encouraging. And like the fictional Terminator, this carrier is transformable, smashed from bulk material, fused inside of cancer cells, and eventually being degraded and clear. Yeah, absorbed, Maddie. That's absolutely how frightening. All right. Well, there's two more stories that I really wanted to get to, and I only have about 2.5 minutes, so I guess we're going to see which story loads first. That one doesn't want to load. How about this one? Is this one going to load? Oh, they love to do this to me. Well, we might not get a story to load. You know what, though? I did something smart last night. So if this doesn't work, all right, it did load. Okay, here we go. So talking about transhumanism and being able, which is exactly what this is, integrating wearables, integrating electronics, bioelectronics, absorbing nanoterminator-style liquid metal into our cells. Yes, well, don't worry about it. Get sucked into the machine. Simulated worlds will soon be indistinguishable from reality. Now, we've talked about that before. I really think this being sucked into the machine has been the ploy all along. And I think it's a lot of what is wrong with society today. They cannot tell the difference between reality and fiction. And that is a lot of this reality television, video games. And as things become more and more realistic, they really don't know what's real and what isn't. It's very easy to tell them what the truth is. it's easy for them to eat up the propaganda that's being pumped out on the boob tube, because the boob tube is more realistic than what's going on around them. Simulated worlds will soon be indistinguishable from reality. The technological singularity, ding, did a ding, is a hypothetical moment in the future when artificial intelligence becomes indistinguishable from human intelligence and capable of creating smarter iterations of itself. And we already saw that with those robots building robots, where they had evolution happening. So that's a frightening thought, and that is not a theory. Apply the same general idea, though, to simulations, and you get the simulation singularity when a simulated world is indistinguishable from reality. This was the theme of a talk this week at London's Digital Shoreditch Festival by engineer Andy Fox, who works for a global simulation software company, Bohemia Interactive Simulations, and is director of tech and training company Think. Will there be a world where the simulation may just be as good as the real world, he asks, or could it even be better than the real world? And guys, this is the dangling carrot. This is how all this crime is happening, without people standing up and saying, wait a second, they are being sucked in already, and now the last nails of the coffin. This is going to usurp our reality. And the more and more we can suck them into the machine, the less and less the criminals have to worry about people paying attention. He says, in a sense, I think that in some regards, this is already happening. Fox said in an interview, if people's minds are already accepting a simulated world as real somehow, then we could perhaps consider that we've already reached the tipping point. And I would agree. Fox showed examples of driving simulators from a game that were nearly visually indistinguishable from real life footage. And I mean, I really think that this is where we're going to have to pick up tomorrow. All right, guys, make sure you stick around because it is Tuesday. Mr. Kevin Blanche is up next. We have Ron live with Game On tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern. Our Interesting Times with Tim Kelly at 8, live at 9 p.m. Eastern, Primer Time with Michael and Nick at 10. This week's Geoengineering Watch with Mr. Dane Wigington. And at 11 p.m., the Anti-Media Radio with S.M. Gibson. All right, guys, have a Tuesday.